This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 360. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Kind of fitting it's 360, considering that after that game and the way this season has gone, it's kind of the talk of the town. We kind of need to take a 360 degree view of this entire team and take stock of where we are and who we are and who's going to stay, who's going to leave, all that fun stuff. And we also get to discuss the painfully predictable and pathetic ending to the Bears game. What a joke show. I couldn't even be mad.
Well, when you say it was predictable,
so predictable.
You could predict that.
And I'll tell you why.
No,
this is what I predicted.
If you're DCH and you're into the reverse jinx, then yes, you were predicting something like that to happen maybe through the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah. So basically I was sitting here watching the game. Neighbor Chris comes over, sits down, and it was, one play before Russ took the sack to knock him back. And they just got done with first down. I can't remember what they did on second down. I was like, don't worry. We're going to take either a stupid sack or a penalty, push us back, and then Myers is going to miss it. Then the Bears are going to get the ball and score. And then we're going to have the ball again and whatever the sequence was there at the end. And just went down the list. I'm like, this is all going to happen. The next drive, we're going to be in field goal range or scoring range, and we're going to have a negative play, probably a holding or a false start, and that's going to knock us back and we won't be able to score. The Bears will go ahead and then we're going to lose on the lat. But I did say it was going to go to overtime.
So this is your fault. You were reverse jinxing the team in an unsanctioned way outside of the normal DCH reverse jinx of the team.
No. I was using the pattern of behavior that we have seen all season long with this team. I mean, I don't know how many times we've gotten on this podcast this season and said, yep, and they were in scoring range and then had two negative plays and it was third and 30 and we had to punt. Like, I mean, how many times has that happened after either a turnover or the defense doing well or whatever it is, right? Like, it's just painfully predictable and pathetic. It was so pathetic.
It was pathetic. I just don't know if it was predictable, because at that point, when you're in the fourth quarter, you're up by 10 points with more than 10 minutes to go. You're playing against Nick Foles and the Bears. Mm-hmm. Your run game is dominating the Bears. They were pushing them around all game on the ground.
Oh yeah.
I thought with 10 minutes left and a 10-point lead, that would be a comfortable enough lead to keep handing the ball to Penny and keep running out the clock and get the win.
It's not what they've done all year. So I had no faith in that's the way that was going to go. Not this season. Definitely not.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a problem that this happens, because, and I don't know exactly who to blame it on, because, you know, Russ was making mistakes. He took the sack there. He got Jason Myers missing the field goal, which was inside 40 yards. Now it was in the snow, so you can make somewhat of a case for that. But so many different failures between Russ, between, I think you could even say, play calling in certain situations. The defense obviously giving up 10 points in the fourth quarter. You had the team making stupid penalties, fourth and one, and Gerald Everett gets called for a false start.
Yeah.
There were so many things that had to happen. It was like the anti-2014 NFC Championship game.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Just a total meltdown. And we've seen all of these inconsistent flaws throughout the season. I mean, this is who they are. And that's what we need to take stock of and really figure out what needs to happen going forward. But in terms of this Bears game, I mean, this is, again, another pattern throughout this entire season. How many crappy backup quarterbacks are we going to lose to this year?
It's getting ridiculous.
Two more?
There's that potential, isn't there? Does Jared Goff count as a backup quarterback?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know if Goff's going to play or not, or if the backup's going to play, but...
Well, I think we can all agree Goff is a crappy backup quarterback. He just happens to be starting.
Well, and I kind of hope that it's not Jared Goff, because not only backup quarterbacks, but backup quarterbacks with 9 letters in their name. Colt McCoy, Nick Foles, and you got Jared Goff. All 9 letters. That's bad news.
That's some beautiful mind stuff. Were you writing that on a grease pit on the window before you came on the podcast tonight? Well,
I noticed it before this Bears game when Nick Foles was coming in instead of Justin Fields. And, the obvious pattern, Nick Foles, Colt McCoy. I have Colt McCoy's name just burned into my brain from these last 2 seasons now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That lined up. And then I thought, oh, shoot, we could have another one here with Jared Goff coming up.
Maybe. Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if they lose to the Lions. I mean, the Lions play inspired football. Now, is it always good football? Absolutely not. But Dan Campbell has those guys, fired up each and every week, and they play hard. And this team has enough dumb mental lapses on the regular to lose to a team like the Lions. Like, that's totally in range. I mean, if you lost to the Bears with Nick Foles, you can easily lose to the Lions at home.
Or the Cardinals with Colt McCoy.
Yeah, that's coming.
Again?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't know if they'll be... I imagine the one seed will be locked up by then.
Yeah, they may still have a division title to be playing for at that point, but maybe not.
Maybe not.
They're kind of in their second half of the season tailspin right now. We can get to all that later. First, let's keep talking about the Seahawks. And, well, okay, another thing that occurred to me, I wouldn't say it's in the beautiful mind type thinking, as in quarterback names, but coming into 2020, Adam, from 2012 to 2019, there's this statistic that we threw around. The Seahawks were 57-0 when leading by 4 or more points at halftime.
Wow.
And now in the last 2 seasons, they've lost 5 games after leading by 4 or more.
It's crazy.
27. They gave up a 27-17 halftime lead in Arizona last year, a 5-0 halftime lead over the Giants last year. They gave up the 24-9 halftime lead against the Titans.
Yeah.
7-3 lead against the Rams at halftime in week 5. And then just this last week against the Bears, 17-7 lead at halftime.
It's incredible how maddeningly inconsistent this team is. And we talked about it before. I mean, the difference between professionals and amateurs is consistency. The difference between average NFL players and great NFL players is consistency. And the funny part is like you listed off all those games, and remembering back, some of those games were offensive meltdowns. Some of them were defensive meltdowns. Some of them were a little bold. Some of them were special teams. Some of it was coaching. Some of it was bad officiating. I mean, just you go down the list of things, and it was, this season's been a house of horrors. I mean, really, everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
And it knock on wood, because we still got 2 more games. I mean, we could have, what you're really worried about now is injury to basically Russ, right?
Well, any long-term injury to anybody, I suppose.
Well, I think everybody else short of Russ, I mean, that's up for debate whether they're back at all, right? Depending on the direction of the team this offseason. And we're going to start to find out a lot in about 3 weeks, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah, we're going to start to see moves being made. And gosh, we already have players coming out and saying that they wouldn't mind having a minority stake in ownership. Marshawn Lynch, Cam Chancellor, talking about that sort of thing. So the off-season wheels are already turning for this team, it seems like.
Oh, for sure. I enjoyed the tweet that somebody posted in the Ring of Honor about of Cam's saying that he would like to have a discussion with Mrs. Allen.
Right, yeah. The tweet was, me and Jody Allen need to have a discussion about the future of the Seahawks, hashtag just saying. And yeah. Thanks, Cam, because no, we don't know what you're saying, because we don't even know what side of the issue you're on. I know when he put it doesn't matter necessarily, other than that he feels like he needs to talk about it, which I felt like is the main story. But I also felt like so many people were saying that Cam was on their side of the issue, whether it's they're pro Pete Carroll or anti Pete Carroll. We don't know. I suspect that Cam Chancellor is pro Pete Carroll, though.
I would imagine, but it doesn't really matter. because whatever Cam thinks is probably the right thing, and I'm cool with it. Like, yeah, Cam, come tell us what we need to do. I'm for reals. Because, I mean, we've talked about it over these last two seasons, trying to figure out, all right, what do we really need to do for this franchise going forward? And I don't know that either of us have come up with the most grand solutions. I've got a thought process that I would like to see the team follow here over the next coming months, but we'll see. And Pete's latest presser was interesting. And when they asked him about Jody Allen and their discussions and what, you know, if they're on the same page and simpatico with everything and about the future. And we said a few pods ago, it's not so much what they say at the press conferences, it's how they say it. And I did not get the sense that Pete was uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form with his future. He doesn't talk like somebody who's worried. I mean, you know what those coaches sound like. I mean, think of Mike Mularkey's and, you know, guys like that who have been on the hot seat. And he does not sound like one of those coaches.
I feel like Pete is a guy, though, that would be comfortable enough just accepting. And maybe not accepting is the right word, but I don't think it's going to impact him one way or another if he were to be let go by the team. And I can sense why you would think that he's comfortable. I just, the weird thing to me, though, about it was hearing Pete talk about how they're on the same page, but he also said that he doesn't talk to Jody directly. That was John Schneider's role. So
said mainly it was John.
Mainly it was John, right. Which, okay. And
maybe Pete and John are clearly on the same page.
Sure.
Have been for the better part of a decade.
So who ends up going down is another question. And, you know, my mind from one day to another can swing based on all the information. I was listening to Matt Hasselbeck on his Matt Hasselbeck show on 710 ESPN on Wednesday. And hearing him just glow about Pete and talk about how he doesn't even recognize some of the things that this team's doing with Pete Carroll as the head coach, but how he's, you know, such an advocate for Coach Carroll, even though, gosh, what, one season under Pete Carroll? And he loves Pete. And so that was, that had me thinking about Pete going forward. And then I hear Russ after the game, and his quote got me so mad. Like, this is not the week to ask me if I want Russ to come back next year. After he said this about that third down play where he took the sack and they missed the field goal afterward.
You know, in that situation, the ball is down the red zone. You know, balls on the 8-yard line or so. I've been moving well for the most part for most of the day. So once it wasn't there, you know, we've had so many scramble opportunities. I was looking for Tyler, trying to see if he could move around and just try to get away, and knowing that, okay, we'll still be, you know, no matter what, you know, we're going to be near field goal range. Obviously, we're inside of it now. I think the risk reward, you know, trying to score a touchdown, we've done it so many times. We've hit Tyler and other guys, you know, and unfortunately, we weren't able to make that play, and then, you know, obviously the situation happens where we don't end up making it, but I was, you know, trying to play ball like I know how to do and always do, and try to, try to move around and just try to see if we can find a touchdown there, especially down in the red zone that close. You know, it's one of those things that, I mean, if I can run it in there, if I can slide to the left, slide to the right, boom, some guy open, touchdown, you know, so that was that situation.
No accountability. No accountability for that play at all. I from what I hear him saying and stumbling around, that's not how I want my quarterback to sound. I want him to say, we could have done better in that situation. It's on me, and I'm going to fix it. Instead, it's, oh, well, it's the situation, and we got backed up, and we were in field goal range, and normally I could make that play. Oh, I did not like that answer.
Interesting.
It took me back to the Dan Patrick interview where he's talking about how, you know, all these sacks that he takes. Well, I throw a lot of touchdowns too. And essentially, I got that same type of feeling from that answer.
I think that's interesting that you find that to be a lack of accountability in a sense, because it's not like he shifted the blame anywhere. Everything he said was...
We were in field goal range.
Exactly. I mean, he's not wrong. If you're tactically thinking about it, And you're trying to, you know, the part of the situation that he didn't fully grasp is how important that 3 points could ultimately be.
Yeah, that 3 points ends the game.
It ends the game. That's where the situational football, where him and Pete for a period of time were very good at, and over these last 2 years haven't been nearly as good at, and you question their decision making. And then you hear Pete talk about Russ's response to that question, and he was like, yeah, you got to understand that Russ, like, more than he hasn't, has come through in those situations. And I trust my players and I trust my stars and I trust the people to get it done in the situation. And when we got back and we talked about it, sure, I critiqued him on it, but the bullets are flying. I can't second guess him too much. Right. So I think his mindset, it's not like his mindset as a quarterback hasn't matured with his diminishing skills in running. And he's been athletic enough to cover up for and really overcome some of those decisions that you go, ooh, I don't know. No, yes.
Right.
And now it's no. Oh, no. Like, we've had way too many of those. And he hasn't adjusted to playing in the second half of his career yet. I'm not saying that he won't, and I think he can. It's going to take a lot of effort and work by the coaching staff, whoever that may be, and Russ himself. And this is a period of time. He's 33 now, right? This was his 32, 33 year old season.
Yeah.
So we've watched people like Aaron Rodgers struggle through that period. We watched Tom Brady struggle through that period, right? That beginning of the second half of their career, when they start to really figure out the important things and how to work around their what we would call limitations now. But I mean, he's still a top tier guy, right? So he's just not explosive as he was before. So it's just, you got to play around the fact that your game has to evolve with your body as you continue to age. And he has the ability to do it now. He's got to accept it too. And I think that's the hard thing, is that at that age, I remember being 32, 33. I still felt like,
yeah,
I
was one of the best ages, that time frame.
I felt as bulletproof as I did in my 20s. And then all of a sudden I wasn't. And that took a little bit of time to realize and to do things differently. Like, for example, just my job, instead of picking up a giant piece of heavy equipment and just throwing it over here, you know, which takes a lot of effort and a lot of back and a lot of all that. You do that once and it comes out just wrong. All of a sudden you learn and you go, oh, I can wait the 30 seconds for the crane to get over here and pick it up and just move it over there. Can I do it? Probably. Do I have to? Absolutely not. And that's where Russ is right now. And he needs to start understanding that going for a touchdown in that situation isn't, it's not even close to necessary. It's not that big of an advantage. The advantage of kicking the field goal there is so much higher. But in his mind, he's like, even if I take the sack, we're still very much in field goal range, which I understand. And then you got Myers, who just misses.
Yeah.
Again, you know, either you believe in Jason Myers or you don't as a teammate, right? And like, during the season, you got to believe in all your dudes. 39 yards, even in the snow, should be makeable.
It should be.
It's sticky. It's sticky, but with the way that the team has played the second half of the year, like, I guess maybe you have nothing to lose, so screw it anyways. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's complicated.
Well, I do get the sense that maybe there is a part of him too that wants to show a little something here toward the end of the season. Maybe he wants to have more touchdowns and that sort of thing, where the win isn't. Yeah. And maybe you just don't change your mindset in terms of how you play situationally. But it wasn't so much all of that thinking that went into it. It was more of the attitude about it after the game, that it wasn't, yeah, you know, I recognize that if I don't take the sack there, you know, maybe we're a little closer. We make the kick and, you know, gosh, I, you know, in that situation, I wanted there to be more recognition of the importance of that particular play.
Sure, if you think that winning against the Bears is ultimately important.
I do.
In a lot of ways, who gives a catfish? Because at the end of the day, sure, we don't have our first round pick, but we've got other picks. If you're picking higher in every round coming up in next year's draft, that's a advantageous thing.
I suppose that was not what was going into Russell Wilson's thinking at that particular moment. And I'm not even that mad that they went down by a point late in the game, because I did want to see how Russell Wilson would respond being in that fourth quarter scenario where he's got to lead the team down the field late and either kick a field goal or score a touchdown to get the go-ahead stat. We haven't seen a Russell Wilson stat this year, and he had the opportunity for the game-winning drive, for the fourth quarter comeback at that point, and they couldn't get it done.
No, which has been a pattern for him, really since the second half of last year. And we talked about it a little on the last pod, the idea that I think one of the reasons he's holding the ball and not just cutting it loose is that stretch, at the end of the first half of last year where he threw a bunch of picks and Pete freaked out, that they had to come to Jesus. And Pete's like, look, there's a formula to win. And that's don't turn the ball over, play decent defense, run the football, make explosives, and we win. And that's been a good formula for Pete for a long time. And then this season, you've seen this team be very good in terms of turnovers. And they've been on the plus side of the turnover margin more often than not.
Oh, yeah.
And doesn't translate into wins. And I think you see Pete coming to Jesus with that too, a little bit, being like, oh, shoot, it wasn't just as simple as let's not do that.
Yeah, it turns out that time of possession and keeping your defense on the field for 40 minutes out of the 60 maybe isn't the best strategy.
Now, with that said, this strategy for defense does work in terms of points.
It works in terms of points, yes.
And it's about the best you can do considering the personnel. I mean, honestly, the defensive play the second half of the year, considering the personnel, you almost have to give Pete an A. I mean, it's about as good as you can do, considering you have almost zero pass rush.
I can't say that it's about as good as you can do because, well, one, they actually had a pass rush in this game. They got to Foles four times, and yeah. I'm baffled again by the fact that you sack the quarterback that many times, and yet you're giving up multiple third and longs in this game to where it was so frustrating. We saw a play where a guy caught the ball falling to the ground, and there wasn't anyone within about 7 or 8 yards of him that he could get up, and he could still move 5 yards. And it took Carlos Dunlap coming from the defensive line to make the tackle.
It's odd because, well, I mean, shoot, even from the first year of the Russell Wilson era, at the end of the Atlanta game, giving up long third downs, right? And ended up losing that game in the playoffs to the Falcons. There hasn't been a time really throughout this time with Pete where it gets past third and 10 and you feel like it's in the bag. Like there's no way they convert this, right? It's been more or less, I get nervous every time it's more than third and 10. I'm more nervous when it's third and long than third and medium.
Yeah, I know.
That's gotta be a philosophy thing.
And then it's things like that that has me shifting to go, you know what? If Pete were to go, I wouldn't miss that part.
Right. And I had this thought today, and maybe it's crazy, but this franchise, the NFL, the whole thing is a business. It's a business. And how many years does Pete have left on his contract now? Three or four,
right? He just re-signed here not too long ago.
How many years are left on Russ's contract?
I want to say it's two.
I want to say it's two as well.
Yeah, he's under contract for 2022 and 2023.
Okay. So with that in mind, we all sit here and go, oh yeah, Pete's gone for sure at the end of the year. You're going to pay Pete Carroll another 3-4 years and another coach? That's a lot of money that comes out of the bottom line. That's a big sunk cost. And you've got Russ for 2 more years. So I guess today, after hearing Pete's presser and thinking about the money involved of trying to move on from Russ and Pete, or one or the other, if it's Russ, it's going to be some dead cap stuff. And if it's Pete, it's literally paying two coaches at the same time. I don't know that ownership has the stomach for that. I would imagine, hearing Pete talk, that he feels like there's some tweaks away from being back.
Mm-hmm.
And I can almost understand that thought process.
You know what? I can see that. That's why when I see people talking about, he was asked on 710 on Monday about like a full reset or rebuild. And I'm thinking, man, you know, with the guys that they've developed at corner this year, and the guys, some of the young guys on the defensive line, you add some pieces there. Even if Bobby Wagner sticks around, and I know there's been some talk about, oh, whether or not with 1 year left on his deal, if you could cut Bobby Wagner and use all that cap savings somewhere else. There's so many different pieces on this team that I like what they have. And even on the thing is, in this game, the way that the offensive line was moving around, that Bears defensive line, with, they have a pretty good defensive line. And what I saw from the running game with Penny and the O-line, I'm thinking, man, maybe the Shane Waldron offense, if they can get the run game clicking, make that work with Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. It does feel like it's more tweaks than it is blow it up.
They have a massive amount of cap space next season. They are missing a first rounder, no doubt, but they are, you know, they have a lot of draft picks from there, and they're going to be relatively high per round. And I go back to the money in financial sense, like, why, if you've, so the reason to get rid of Pete would be so that you keep Russ, right? So that Russ doesn't leave. That, I think that's your number one concern.
Or if you just think that Pete's style of football isn't going to get you the types of wins.
That's the secondary concern, which is also large, but your number one is to keep Russ. I think Russ has 2 years left on his deal.
Yeah.
He can have a hissy fit all he wants. He can go on any show that he wants and run his mouth, AKA Aaron Rodgers last year.
Right.
And you can look at that player and say, tough titties, you're under contract. You're going to play for another year or maybe two.
I bet that's the phrase they use too.
Absolutely would. That's the exact phrase I would use. Be like, dude, tough titties. Your nipples are going to be a little roughed up here, but you're going to play.
Nothing worse than chafed nipples.
I am of the mindset that with all that cap space and the ability to make big roster moves, that I think if I had to put money on it today, they're running this back next year.
There has to be a fall guy, though. Who takes the fall for this season?
It'll be personnel.
You don't think you get rid of a single coach? Not even Ken Norton Jr.
Why?
Because somebody has to take the fall.
Nobody does, actually. There's no law.
Okay, nobody has to.
Exactly. Pete's incredibly loyal to Ken. And especially with the defense turning it around in two seasons and being the better unit and more consistent unit of the two. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying if you're looking at it from Pete's perspective.
Yeah, I suppose. The defense has been a problem to me that back-to-back seasons that your defense has been terrible to start the season. But yes.
Yeah, I think it's a massive problem. Don't get me wrong. This isn't my own
personal thought process. No, you're rationalizing it as ownership / Pete Carroll.
Right. Then, okay, we've got a massive amount of cap space. We don't have to give up the farm and future draft picks to bring guys in. Let's just go ahead and reload and really concentrate on the trenches. If they went into the season, kept Pete and Russ, and went out and did Rams things and brought, short of trading, you know, all the draft picks away for the next 25 years and just spent like madmen and went for it, which is probably what they should do. When you have a franchise quarterback, just go all in for two more years and see what happens.
AKA the Rams strategy right now.
Yeah. I mean, the Packers strategy.
The Falcons, I think, employed that strategy. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. The Falcons are an example.
No, they didn't do it very well. The Saints employed that strategy with Drew Brees.
Sure. Drew was much more limited at that stage in his career than Russ is at this point.
Oh, for sure.
I would argue.
Yeah. Well, Drew was later in his 30s.
Yeah. I just think it's far more likely that this all gets run back. And if I know that's lighting a bunch of people's hairs on fire, like right now, but think about it. Think about how many coaches throughout the years that you thought that guy's got to be gone. I mean, who is the guy for the Lions for the longest time? Wayne Fonts.
Okay.
Wayne Fonts. He's basically Rasputin. You couldn't kill him. Like he came back year after year after year. I mean,
yeah,
these situations, they're slow to change. And I think the counter argument to all of it is this team has been in free fall for 3 years. This isn't just a 1 year blip.
Right.
And it doesn't take just a few tweaks, but that's a lot harder to do. And it's a bigger financial pill to swallow than I'm totally sure that a relatively small market team is willing to do.
It could be fixed with some tweaks, but it seems like some of those tweaks are ones that Pete Carroll and his philosophy wouldn't be willing to make. And so that's where you kind of, you get into this argument of if Pete sees the ability to make the tweaks, he accepted the offense running through Russ for a half a season under Brian Schottenheimer. And man, oh man, the team scored more points in its history, and then they fired the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that amazing offense also disintegrated into a crap show for half a year as well. And that felt like when Pete put his finger on it because he was so freaked out about the turnover thing.
Yeah.
And I think this season has to prove to him that the turnover margin, while important, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's not an important thing, but that would be one of his holy grails that I think he would have to change on. He's going to have to put the ball in Russ's hands and find offensive linemen that are premier run blockers. I know most people would think you need to find premier pass blockers for Russ. I don't think that's the case at all. I think you need to be able to consistently run it down people's throats because Russ is best when he's play action, boots, that sort of thing, and in smaller doses. And if you're an older quarterback, you should also be really excited to accept that sort of thing because it's going to keep you from getting hit. It's going to keep you upright and healthy throughout a season, and it's going to be your best chance at winning a Super Bowl.
And when you keep Rashad Penny, you need guys to open up those big holes because you see, once Penny gets ahead of steam, he can bowl some dudes over.
I saw an article entitled Penny has earned the opportunity to be the lead back next year and that sort of thing and bring him back. And I understand that there's a massive heroin problem in the Seattle area. I get that. But even with that, like no effing way, none. As much as I love Chris Carson, right?
Yeah.
I'm not planning on him next year.
No, you need a young dude. You need a young guy who can, you can count.
Three. On. You need three.
Three of them. Sure.
Yeah. And
I don't know. The third guy could be DJ Dallas. I could see him coming back as the number three.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the number three.
I know, but we've seen too often that the number three has to be utilized far too often. And then let us not forget, through all the excuses and why Pete could have a decent sales job of making sure that he comes back, COVID. Like it's been the number one excuse in this country for 2 years for things not getting done one way or the other. You screw up as a business right now, something doesn't go right. COVID. You just throw that under there. I mean, he can definitely be like, oh man, I mean, geez, we've been even dealing with that. We've gotten through just fine and blah, blah, blah.
How come the Seahawks only have two home wins this year? COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. And people buy that crap. So, I mean, I'm not saying that COVID isn't important and all that stuff. Like, I'm just saying it often in this day and age has been used as an excuse to mask other ineptitudes.
So what you're saying is that you've used it as an excuse and it's worked for you. And you're trying to pass that along to Pete as, hey, this worked for me. Maybe it works for you to be able to keep your job.
Brandon Schultz, there's no way. There's no way in the last 2 years you haven't used COVID as an excuse once to either not go to some sort of function or that you were late getting something done or something. I promise you, in one way, shape, or form, you've used COVID as an excuse. We all have. We all have.
It's very possible.
No. It's not possible. It is 100% probable.
I don't know what you're talking about.
COVID.
Yeah.
But it's just crazy because you can't just look at Pete and be like, yep, he's 100% of the problem. See you later. You can't just look at Russ and be like, you're 100% of the problem. See you later. You can't look at the offensive line. You're 100% down in the line. And the problem is that the offense, I feel like, has been the real problem over these last 3 years or so, like more so than the defense. And we're on three coordinators now, and that hasn't really changed.
No. But I can see the pieces of some of what Shane Waldron's been bringing. The blocking in this game with the offensive line, with the run game, I don't think that we've seen it look that good in some of these games these last few weeks. Now, maybe it has to do with the snow, the footing. Some of the players seem to be unsure about the footing on the field, so that could have had a big role in it in this game. And, you know, when it looked really good against the Texans a few weeks back, I thought it had a lot to do with the offensive line making some big holes. So, yeah, I don't think that changing the offensive coordinator this offseason, I don't think that that's the best route to go either.
And not only that, Waldy is Russ's guy.
You would think.
He's the one that he wanted.
You would think.
He's gone to bat for him in press conference after press conference.
He went to bat for it. He's gone to bat for all of his offensive coordinators, though.
To a degree, sure. Sure. But this whole last offseason, I mean, the whole narrative was that he wanted more input, and it was pretty clear that he got that when it came to Waldron.
Just hasn't been able to execute necessarily this year.
And another excuse that you bring up, if you're Pete or, you know, anybody who's trying to run this back, is, well, hey, man, that was Shane Waldron's first year as an offensive coordinator. He'd never done it before. Like, he's going to be so much better in year two.
They have the offseason to, you know, break down what worked, what didn't work. I don't know why you can't do that in the season, but I suppose a lot of that happens in the offseason.
I think the easiest thing and the number one thing would be, let's find a real center. Let's find a real right tackle that you can rely on game in and game out. Brandon Schell, when he's healthy, is pretty good.
Yeah, he's fine.
But he's just so often not healthy.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. It's just the truth of the matter. Gabe Jackson has been fine. Damian Lewis would probably be a lot better if you have an actual center playing next to him that he can rely on, right?
Uh-huh.
And then Dwayne Brown, he slipped a little this year. It hasn't been a dumpster fire by any stretch. But you can see him slowing down a step.
Yeah, I think there's players, gosh, once you get into your late 30s and mid 30s, that, you're not going to be as good. I was actually thinking that it wouldn't hurt to see somebody kind of filling in for Dwayne late in this game just to get some more playing time at left tackle. And no, that didn't work out that way. I don't think we're going to see it. I think the players, because Pete was asked about this, whether or not players are going to, or if he was going to approach things a little bit differently and considering playoffs weren't an option. And I don't think that coaches, I don't think that a coach like Pete Carroll is willing to sit guys just to see guys in and how they respond in game scenarios. Because that's why they see these guys at practice and they want to put the most deserving players out on the field. And so you might see it for a snap or two, but you're not going to see it for good portions of the game unless the game's out of hand.
I think you've seen coaches in the past who you would think that about, but behave differently, like Harbaugh or Tomlin or guys like that who have an infinite amount of job security. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're more willing to, on those last few games when, okay, this season just didn't go the right way. I want to see what this guy's got. and I want to see what that guy's got. And you treat it a little more like preseason, which would probably be the smarter thing to do as well, just to increase your draft position. But
I suppose
Pete being in the precarious situation that he is, I don't think he has that option.
With this, I hear people making this argument that Pete would want to finish strong to the season to show that to show a little something to ownership, I suppose. I just, from what we've seen in terms of the problems this year, I don't know if we can see enough in these last two games to do a 180 on everything that we've seen before in the previous 15 weeks.
Not on this year. And that's the thing, is that the history of Pete and Russ together, because I hear people say, well, it's one bad year, and I don't personally feel that way, but that is factually true.
If you look at the record.
If you look at the record.
And you now, consider good and bad winning and having a winning season, yeah.
What I look at here now is that in the last 5 years, we have won exactly one playoff game over the Eagles.
Right.
And it was ugly. That's not one bad year.
That's what I mean. It depends on how you define good and bad. And yeah, it's just not good enough.
It's not championship level.
Right.
It's not being a contender for a championship. And I think over the last 2 years, I think we've all felt that for sure, that it's no longer a championship level team or a contender for it. We had hopes. Well, if this works out, if that works out, then maybe.
Yeah. And I think that's where that the people who are on Team Blow It Up, that's kind of where their mindset is at. So I can see that too. I can see so many different perspectives when I try and wrap my mind around this team.
For all people that are Team Blow It Up, prepare to be disappointed this offseason.
Yes, I think that's safe to say.
It seems more likely just because of the money. I mean, and that's the end of the day. Most decisions come down to money. They really do.
Chad Hawley comes in via email. Another person who was in Houston that I'm kind of bummed that I didn't get to meet up with. He emails in, says, top five real reason the Seahawks were bad this year. 5, Russell still hasn't paid his protection money to the O-line mafia. 4, Ken Norton Jr. believes that man defense would be an illegal procedure penalty on the defense. 3, John Schneider has a gambling problem. He lost his last bet and ended up owing the Jets GM 2 first-round picks. 2, Paul G. Allen Trust is tanking on purpose with the intent of moving the team to Portland. 1, Pete Carroll's X button doesn't work. Go Hawks.
That was a hilarious email from Chad. I particularly enjoyed the O-line mafia part of it. I don't see Jody Allen wanting to move the team to Portland only because I don't know that she's going to keep the Blazers. That seems far more precarious. She's Seattle based. I don't think, you know, that Allen legacy as an owner. I mean, basically Paul Allen saved us from the team moving and like for Jody to move it. I mean, she might as well dig up Paul's body and like just stab him right in the throat. Like,
yeah, that would be pretty bad.
No, I think
more likely than moving would be creating an ownership group of former players that allow these Seahawks legends to buy into the team to be part owners, which I don't think would happen anyway, but I think it's more likely.
Why not? Take the minority owners' money. Like, who cares? You're minority owners. Show up to the games. Feel important.
But wouldn't it be cool to eventually have a team in Seattle owned by former team members?
It'd be fun. Sure. Maybe.
I think that'd be fun.
I would think so. But the problem is that if it didn't work out well, then I'd have to hate all of the former players that I really like. I don't want that.
Well, they're owners. You can't get mad at an ownership group.
Oh, are you sure? Why don't you ask everybody in St. Louis or San Diego about that?
Yeah, well, that's if you move the team, but you know, you don't see the Packers going anywhere.
No, but they're not. Well, like you said, that's an ownership group, I guess. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. An ownership group of former Seahawks players. It'll work out well.
Can they sign me to a 1-day contract so I can be a former player and then have a stake in the team?
Sure. Hey, you know what? If we can buy team ownership stakes like Packers fans can, that even though it's not real, then maybe they could do it for us too.
It's kind of sort of real. I don't think that's like a legit. Yeah,
it's real in that they take your money and you get a certificate saying that you're that you own a piece of the team. Sure.
Well, you do like shares. Like you buy a share of Tesla, you don't like call up Elon and tell him to make, you know, something four-wheel drive with some clearance for a change.
Well, the difference is that I can sell my Tesla stock to another person and get the money for it with the Packers quote unquote shares. I mean, unless you want to sell your piece of paper to some other dude, but that would be kind of weird.
Oh, I figured that's how it worked. I thought you could sell them. Isn't
no, it's
like
a bearer
bond.
No,
you?
It's like buying a fake diploma offline. You have a certificate with your name on it.
Oh, okay.
And maybe the better analogy is like if you need to officiate a wedding and you need to find if you need to become what do you call that?
Ordained.
No, you get ordained. You have a certificate that says you're ordained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can be ordained through the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Meatballs or whatever it is, and
Flying
that
Spaghetti
sort of
Monster. Yeah. And I'm I'm of the what is it, the Church of Dudism?
Yep, Dudism. Sure, absolutely. Fun fact, you don't have to be ordained in Montana. You can just marry people.
It's true. I went through that process for nothing.
Yeah. I've done it twice. Doomed people to marriage.
Doomed. Come on now.
Well, hey, if you want the state involved with your life, then definitely get married. Like in your relationship, you bet. It never ends badly.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bitter divorce.
More email. Jason Harden comes in, says, bad things happen. This is not the end. It's just a narrative that some want to have because Russell is playing on the Lost Coast. Wilson has always frustrated me. Any interview is usually the worst I've ever heard. Give me more Nick Ballore. I'll be more upset when I see Bobby cleaning out his locker. End of our era. Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown. We have grown. John Lennon.
Yeah, that is a solid comment. I remember reading that and thinking I might be a little more sad at a Bobby departure than a Russ departure. But one of the interesting things is I've heard people say, oh, Bobby, he's slipping.
Well, he's gone from Hall of Fame to really, really good.
How many people have more tackles this year than Bobby Wagner?
Oh, yeah. And there's nobody.
Oh. So he's still elite and commands the whole defense.
There's plays where you say Bobby Wagner from 4 years ago makes that play a little bit differently, though. Which is fine. He's just 4 years older than he was then.
I don't get that sense. I think they put him in too many zone coverage situations where I don't care if you're Superman on the field. Like, good luck. You're just putting a bind too many times.
Well, that's part of the reason why he has as many tackles as he does.
Sure.
Where they open up the middle of the field and it's the guy that Bobby Wagner has to tackle. And they're asking him to play deep zone. And so he's having to cover 6 or 7 yards before making a tackle.
Oh, yeah. Part of the painfully predictable part of the Bears game was when the Bears got the ball back and scored the touchdown there. And one play pops up. And I was like, oh, watch, we're going to play soft zone. And they're just going to throw it to the middle of the field like every time and just march right down. And Chris is like, nah, they can't possibly do that. I was like, no, watch. This is what we're going to do. Watch.
It's what happened.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner, in his press conference on Wednesday, made it sound like he may have an uncertain future. And maybe part of that is due to his $20 million salary cap number for next season. But I don't know. I just, with the way that the Seahawks salary cap is, I don't know. Now, maybe you give him an extension. Maybe you lower that amount to where it's not as big of a cap hit. And you can, because I could see Bobby playing for 2-3 more years easy.
Bobby's cap number is not an issue when you look at the overall cap situation of the Seahawks going into next year. It really isn't.
I mean, would I like Bobby to make less so they could pay more offensive linemen? Sure, I'd like that. But would you risk getting rid of Bobby Wagner? Yeah, for no reason. Although they risk getting rid of Carlos Dunlap for no reason, too.
Yeah, well, there's another part of the get rid of Pete bandwagon right there, right? I mean, you start giving Dunlap more opportunities and he has 5 sacks in 5 games and tears it up.
I wonder, it is more opportunities, but it's not a lot more.
Yeah, imagine if it was.
Sure.
But then again, if you're playing to get in the playoffs and then make hay in the playoffs, that strategy makes some sense, right?
Yeah, a late season surge by Dunlap that would have worked out really well had they been in position to make the playoffs.
Yeah, had they just closed out like 2 to 3 games. And, you know, you heard Pete talk a little bit about that in his presser too, about the idea that still trying to figure out, you know, which guys you can go to in crunch time. He's like, well, we know Tyler. And
yeah,
you know, we try to get it to DK, but he hasn't proved to be a closer. And he brought up the Saint Doug Baldwin. He's like, oh yeah, Doug would make his plays. Yeah. Yeah, Doug was that guy. I mean, Tyler does a decent job of that, but not like Doug.
No.
We don't even have, I mean, DK is not even as clutch as Jermaine Kearse at this point in the biggest moments.
Not in the biggest moments, no. And I was a little bit surprised when in our Discord, Josh posted the number of targets since Russ came back. And DK leading the way with 53 targets, Lockett 41, Everett 38. Now, yardage is big to Lockett because all the deep throws, and Everett actually leading in touchdowns with 3, followed by Lockett with 2, and then 1 to DK. And I think that was the one that was just added in this Bears game. Man, I can't believe after that throw to DK, and what he had one more catch after that.
Yeah, there's a inconsistency to either Russ's play or DK's play, because for his physical gifts, like, that should be a gimme on almost any play. Oh, which brings me to Jimmy Graham scoring in the Bears game. Who was on him? Was that Reed?
John Reed? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think he was playing DJ Reed's side.
Yeah. So Jimmy Graham has been washed up for 4 years. He can literally do one thing and one thing only, and that is run at you straight on, body you up, and then jump. Hey, did you watch how far he jumped in the air, Jimmy, for that touchdown?
No, it wasn't high.
If I had 4 pieces of paper, I don't think I could have slipped it under his feet. There's no possible way. And so he does. He plays over the top, does all the things that you could do to defend him against the things he can't do, except for defend him against the one thing he can do.
Yeah.
That was so maddening.
Yeah, it was frustrating that Jimmy Graham was the one to score that touchdown, and it came on a 3rd and long as well.
And then, hey, let's give Bird some credit, man. That was a hell of a catch.
That was a good
catch. On the 2-point?
Now, the defenders, if they could have focused on carrying him out of bounds rather than trying to tackle him, and if Amadi maybe swats at the ball before he hits the ground rather than waiting until he's holding it up after he's on the ground, yeah, you know, maybe things work out a little differently.
The way the players played that play, 8 times out of 10, that is a incomplete pass.
Oh, yeah. There's no way you should be holding on to that football.
No. So I can't really be mad on the 2-point. I really can't.
I can be a little mad because there were 3 guys there and he still came down with the football somehow.
Somehow. Yeah. Because Big Catfish Nick gets it in there.
Wired Speaker comes in. I think this was via YouTube. Years of poor roster construction on the lines has left this team continually patching holes and crossing fingers year after year that it works good enough. There is not one single young dude to build around on either line. Not one. Why would Russ want to stay here and waste any more time? Had they taken Creed in the draft, we would have had one guy. That one guy would have made an immediate impact and probably helped us win 2 more games this season. Oh no, Pete and John couldn't even figure that out.
I think all of us would agree that Creed Humphrey would have been a much bigger difference maker for our team this year than Eskridge.
Well, yeah, and now you can say that. Gosh, you can say that about, man, if you take Creed Humphrey in the 2nd round, you look over at the Detroit Lions at this game coming up, and they have Amon-Ra St. Brown, and you look at what he's been doing. He was a 4th round receiver out of USC.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, they must be wired right into you and I's thought process, because we've been talking about this for years. Quit screwing around on the perimeter and focus on
the trenches.
Lines. It's where the games are won and lost.
I would say that the way Daryl Taylor's playing, I think he is the one guy on the defensive line that you can say, yeah, you can see that in this first year that he's had been able to play. You kind of look at last season as the last season because he was injured. But Daryl Taylor, we've seen some things this year.
Yeah, good enough, right, for the position he was drafted in. I guess the problem is at the top of the draft, I mean, there's just been so many whiffs, whether that's LJ Collier, who's a healthy scratch all the time, Penny, yeah, McDowell, Eskridge this year. Just on and on and on.
Yeah, with Eskridge, I mean, you can rack that up to injuries and
game plan. Injury, health is a part of talent, dude.
And then he goes and gets hit in the side of the helmet while he was well out of bounds in this game against the Bears. What do we have to do to go after Ogletree? That guy was being a jerk in this game. He got the...
Yeah.
And he flopped, and I was glad to hear Aqib Talib call out his flop. Remember when he got the unsportsmanlike penalty? Because I think he swatted at the ball when Eskridge had the ball. And then Eskridge kind of gives him a little one-handed shove that was, you know, not even hard. And he falls down on the ground.
Oh, yeah. He hit him with the force of, two Hiroshima bombs, man. Like, the way he flopped. I mean, give me a break.
So what do you think about this game coming up against the Detroit Lions?
I'm very much in the I don't give a crap mode. Like, I really don't care. And I'd like to sit here on the podcast that's about Seahawks football and tell you how passionately I care about this Detroit Lions game. I don't care. I really don't care. I just want the season to be over. And it will be whatever it is.
You want it to be over. You want the information. You want to find out what happens next.
Yeah. This is the first time in a long time I've been really excited about the offseason.
I don't know if I'm excited.
I am.
I'm intrigued.
We'll get some clarity.
I was hoping to get some clarity just by seeing in this last game and wondering if Russell Wilson could close out a win and get a come from behind win. Do I have to call for that again against the Lions?
I guess. You seem very focused on Russ's late game performance, maybe more so than I am.
I just want the old Russell Wilson mindset, and I feel like he is stuck in neutral somehow. I want some fire from Russ. The thing is, I was thinking about this a lot because, you know, the whole neutral mindset thing, I feel like it does go back to last season. And neutral works when you're playing well and you can kind of just you can be in that groove and coast, right? But when you're in that struggling mode, I don't think neutral is a good place to be. And I'm not saying he's struggling, but he's not in the ideal place where I want my quarterback to be.
Do you believe he's really in neutral? Because I don't. I believe he's in scared.
Well, he talks about always having that neutral mindset.
Oh, I know he says it all the time. Words and actions are just different things. And to me, the actions on the field, they point to scared, not committing that turnover, keeping us in the game, keeping it tight, manage this thing.
He has to change his mindset. I think we're both in agreement on this.
Well, yeah, it has nothing to do with neutral or not. It has everything to do with, are you trusted by your head coach to just make the play and not worry about turning over the football? Do you have a defense that snuffs people out so that you don't have to worry about turning over the football?
I think there is something to the way Russell Wilson thinks about things. I think if you articulate it in a way that you want your mindset to be, there is some of the performance that follows. And so I don't want him talking about neutrality right now. I want him talking about, I want fire.
All right, let's take two case examples here real quick about neutral mindset that you would probably apply to these two quarterbacks. One would be Tom Brady. He is unflappable, right? Yeah. Unflappable. So that would point to a quote neutral mindset, but yet gets fired up when they have a big play. Sound like somebody, you know? Now, also the second one I'd point to, his nickname was Joe Cool. And the reason his nickname was Joe Cool is because he was neutral and right here, no matter what, no matter if you have to score late against the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. And sure, he had big fired up moments when he made the play. And we laud that. We applaud it. We think it's a mark of a champion. Which is it? Do you want somebody who's more like, I wouldn't even say Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers is freaking neutral. I could not guess whether or not he gives a shit whether he's on the field half the time.
Okay.
There's times
you're naming all
these. Do you want him to be Brett Favre?
You're naming all of these quarterbacks that were playing really, really well at one particular time. And Russ is not playing well right now. I want him to be in that moment once he's playing well.
Did Russ play particularly well in a moment throughout his career?
Yeah, he's had amazing stretches.
Same neutral mindset and positivity and all that stuff.
When he gets good again, he can go back to that. That is what I'm saying.
Okay, so your problem is it being good or not. It has nothing to do with the mentality, other than being afraid to take the gambles that you need to take. And then when you do take the gamble, and this has been the problem with Pete too, the inappropriate times to gamble and to not gamble. It's like they have it catfishing reversed.
Yeah.
We've talked about it for so long, the risk management side of the game. That's the mentality I want to change. I don't care if it's first gear, fifth gear, reverse. I don't give a crap. Neutral. I just want the risk management to be appropriate for the situation.
Let Russ get his confidence back.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Especially against zone coverage. And what he needs to do is to find who would be the ultimate Tampa 2 beater in your mind over the course of history. Who just tore up Tampa 2? Whoever that quarterback is.
Watch him.
Russ needs to be in his hip pocket all freaking offseason and just practice against zone coverage. Because right now, if he doesn't see it, if it's man, he has an easier time seeing it.
Yeah.
But anticipatory throws into windows, it's just not his jam right now. He can't do it because he's afraid.
Yes.
And I would say that's not neutral. That's scary.
Let's get to the second half of the show. It is time now to look around the rest of the NFC West, Adam, as we get into the second half of the show.
Okay.
Where do you want to start? It's been kind of an interesting week with the Cardinals losing to the Colts on Saturday. You had the Rams I think they beat the Vikings pretty easily. You had the 49ers on Thursday Night Football losing to the Tennessee Titans, falling to 8-7, but they're still in the playoff picture. I think that was one of the frustrating things is that the Niners lost and the Seahawks with a win. We could have caught the Niners and now we are doomed to last place in the NFC West.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Much of what they do for the rest of the season also falls under the category I don't care, mainly because I know the way it's going to turn out. And I just want to congratulate the city of Los Angeles on their totally crooked Super Bowl that they're about to win. So it's just hard for me to care about the rest of the season that is predetermined. So congratulations, LA.
This is why I'm going to end up having to root for a team like the Cardinals or the Niners in the playoffs to root for them to take down the Rams.
Why? No.
Because I want to root against the fixed outcome that you've determined.
Hey, look, that's fine, I guess. I just don't want either of them to win, and I just would wait until they play somebody that's not in the division and then root for that team. As long as it's not the Cowboys.
You're narrowing the very small window of playoff teams that are able to make the playoffs.
Right, this playoff already sucks. It's like the year that the Niners and the Ravens played in the Super Bowl. You're like,
I'm not going to root for the Cowboys because screw them. I'm not going to root for the Packers because screw Aaron Rodgers. I can't root for Tom Brady to win again because he's won so many.
True.
We've named all the playoff teams.
All right, fine. I've got nothing but hate in my heart, Brandon. I've nothing but hate in my heart. And I hate for this season and hate for all the outcomes and all the people that are in position to win the Super Bowl. My sports hate cup is overflowing.
Bills or bust.
Sure. And they're trick or treat enough that I don't even want to care about them either. Ah, it's so gross. How does it? You bring up the NFC West roundup, right? Like we've been doing all year.
Uh-huh.
And the second you started talking about it, my blood just boiled. My blood just boiled. I guess watching the Cardinals having their late season collapse, just how I said they would, feels good. That's nice. I really would like the Niners to finish with more losses than wins, only because that would cement Kyle Shanahan's legacy of being a sub 500 coach.
It might happen because Jimmy G is out for the season. It sounds like.
Yeah.
And Trey Lance coming in. Now I don't think that they're going to lose to the Texans because, I mean, how well does that set up for Trey Lance for his first game being back to be against one of the teams that's just absolutely terrible at stopping the run? So I don't see that working out. I don't see how the Texans can win that game.
I don't know what the path looks like and how that might actually work, but I am rooting for that. That's what I can root for. Yes.
Yes. You know what? That is one outcome that I am more interested in this weekend than most games, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to watch Trey Lance throw more inaccurate picks than Jimmy G, which you didn't think was possible, but that's who the Niners went out and made sure to draft.
We'll see about that.
Is it worse to be a Niners fan or a Seahawks fan right now? Like, if you were an objective NFL person that didn't have a dog in the race.
I think as a Niners fan, you can at least have a sense of delusion around your fandom that makes you think that things might work out fine.
Well, their entire fandom is based on delusion, so that's not surprising.
That can work out for them.
I think their future looks more bleak than ours.
I would agree. But I think that they can clinch to that little bit of hope that they made the right choice with their quarterback.
Okay.
They can, and they will.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's allowed. You're right. They can. It is allowed.
Got the Rams taking on the Ravens this weekend. I think we know the outcome of that game.
I don't know that we do.
Yeah, you think that the NFL would allow that when they're so close to their opportunity of locking up the NFC West title? You think they're going to let that slip?
And take the one seed so they can have even more games that they can rake in all the money from SoFi Stadium? Yeah, you're right.
Or you think the Packers are going to let the one seed slip away?
I think that they will do their best with everything that's within their control to not allow that to happen. Now, whether or not the league allows that to happen is a whole nother situation.
Cardinals will get to continue their losing streak on the road against the Cowboys. So that is going to continue.
Yeah, they had a field day against the Washington football team. That's for sure.
They've been struggling, man. They lost to the Lions. Now, we have to beat the Lions just so we... Now, wouldn't that bother you if both the Seahawks and the Cardinals lost to the Lions?
No.
The two win Lions?
No. It still bothers me that we lost to the freaking Titans the way that we did.
Yeah.
Like, it still bothers me that we lost to the Steelers the way that we did. It still bothers me...
that we lost to the Washington football team.
It doesn't bother me the way we lost the Bears, but it freaking bothers me. There's so many of these games, especially early on, that they just should have had.
The Saints game, even with Geno in at quarterback.
I know. The first Rams game.
Up again, where they had the halftime lead against the Rams.
I know.
All right.
Double gross.
Why? The great idea to have this segment this year.
They can't all be winners. They can't all be winners.
We do have some winners, our members of the flock at getintheflock.com. Thanks to our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, Kevin Watterson, Dr. G, and an executive producer. You know, I'm going to have to carry over Jason, Kyler, Yano to another month because, yes, he came in with the 12-12 amount for the entire year. Jason has been with the show for a long, long time.
Forever.
Probably since the beginning. I think since the beginning.
Yeah.
And he ups his pledge from 60 annually to 145.44. Says, regarding my raise to 12-12, Merry Christmas, you filthy animals. Thanks for a great year of flocking. I finished my PhD a couple weeks ago and wanted to give you guys a raise as part of my celebration. I'm excited to see what the next iteration of the Seahawks is going to look like starting next season. I joined the flock immediately after the play that shall not be named, and now I'm finally going full 12-12. Like many others have said recently, thanks for being there for our sports mental health this year. You guys deserve all the good things. Thanks a million.
Catfish!
This season. And
catfish!
Wheel grinding. You two are the best. Go Hawks.
Hey, man. I appreciate that, dude. But seriously, let's not bury the lead here. Congratulations on your PhD, man. That's a huge accomplishment.
Dr. Kyler Yano, right there.
That, I mean, just wow. Like, seriously, I hope that everything that ought to come with that comes your way, man. And just incredible. I mean, I could barely put up with getting a bachelor's, so. And it was in a worthless degree.
Not worthless. It's worth something.
Oh, yeah. No, oh, maybe a cardboard box to live in. That's about what it was worth.
You did it, though. Don't sell yourself short.
On a photojournalism degree?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, don't go for one of those.
I don't know. It could lead to a future in podcasting.
No, I didn't need the degree for that, it turns out. All I needed was my good buddy from kindergarten, a microphone, and a bunch of amazing people who listen to the show.
Who listen to the show, who support the show. Gosh, we have two executive producers who are doctors. Although I do think that Dr. G is an actual medical doctor. Not that, you know, there's a distinction there that I probably don't need to make, but I am.
If you have to say it, then you are a doctorist. You are.
I don't want to be. Yeah. I don't want to be a doctorist.
Yeah, all doctors are doctors.
All doctors are doctors.
Yeah,
except for chiropractors. Shout out to the chiropractors out there. I don't know.
I call my good friend who's a chiropractor, Dr. Tori.
Do you?
Yeah, she's earned it. She makes me better, and that's hard to do. And I don't care if it's wizardry; it doesn't matter.
It is. It is. Chiropractics is wizardry.
Yeah, but
maybe they should have the wizard title.
Just go full mythical.
Sure.
Sorcerer Tori.
Or sorceress. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a lot like actor these days. You don't say actress anymore. Just everybody's an actor. That's how sorcerers work.
You get to decide.
I mean, it give me at least some credit from staying away from witch.
I was trying to do that.
Yeah. See? Okay.
If you want to become a member of the flock, we're looking for more doctors, sorcerers, sorceresses.
I don't know. Independently wealthy billionaires. Like, that'd be great. Because I'd love to stop doing the wheel grinding and give you guys 3 to 4 shows a week. That'd be pretty cool.
Getintheflock.com.
Yeah.
Did you have any revelations this last week as far as we heard from some people that, you know, an NFL show would be cool. Maybe some fantasy talk.
Mm-hmm. The revelation being that with you and I discussing things a little bit earlier today, that, you know, I think there's some actual viable paths to making that happen. And with all the folks that you talked about that we could work with doing that, I think if we all focused on the goal that, you know, maybe by this time next year, I don't have to be a dirty grinder anymore.
Well, there we go. Set a goal, and we will look to achieve it.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Because I'm in. I'll do this nonsense 3 days a week.
Put your mind in neutral, and let's get there.
I think I figured out what the deal is with the neutral thing, actually, when we were on break.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe this is me projecting because of the way I feel about things, but I think you want him to be more decisive.
That could be. And neutral does not, just the word neutral does not exude decisiveness.
Right. And that's, you know how I feel about people who are indecisive.
Yeah, you hate it. It's like one of the worst things imaginable.
Just make a decision one way or the other. Like they're not all going to be good. You have 50-50 shot every time. Who cares? Yeah. Just choose one. Like, for example, how many of you are in relationships right now? And then the question comes up, what do we do for dinner? Right?
Yeah.
It's the one that every long-term relationship, we all dread that question.
Comes up
right?
Every single day almost.
Yeah, every single day. You know what you do? Well, if the other person asks you, you think of the first thing that pops to mind and you say enchiladas.
You just decide.
It doesn't really matter. Just make the choice. And guess what? It all goes forward really well.
The thing is that can be built off of.
100%. And guess what? If enchiladas suck that night, then you actually say, oh, well, look at that. We learned something. Ha ha. And then it's a good time.
Or you could say, no, I don't feel like enchiladas. And then you have to
see. Now, this is the part of food relationship discussions that get me crazy.
Mm.
When the other, and this, Brittany doesn't do this. This is not an indictment on her by any stretch. But I have been in relationships where they'll say, what do you want for dinner? And I'll go, hamburgers. Hmm. I don't want hamburgers. Then why'd you fucking ask me? That makes me insane. Hey, what do you mean you don't want hamburgers?
I was hoping you were going to say something different. That's all.
Well, yeah, you know, if you thought I was going to say something different, obviously you have something in mind, then make a decision. Why did you ask me to make the decision that you weren't going to like no matter what? No, not lasagna. No, no. I want something with more texture. Rice and beans. I don't know. Like, just you decide. If you didn't want me to decide, why'd you ask me what we're doing for dinner?
I was just asking what you'd like. So that your first option's out the window. It's because that partner wanted you to be miserable and wanted to shoot down what you most wanted for dinner that evening.
It's not even that I most wanted it. It's just I made the decision. I just made one. Like, because it doesn't genuinely matter.
And you consistently make bad decisions. And so that was obviously the wrong one. And so now one has been eliminated from the choice
See, that's the thing that most people got to realize in life. Most decisions are neither bad nor good. They just are.
But the opinion of your partner is that you always make the worst decision.
Is that she's a dumbass and has something in mind and won't just share it with me and make that decision. And again, not Brittany. Brittany's really great those things.
I know. We're talking about previous ones.
Yes. And if I push her to make a decision about something, if she's going back and forth, I don't know, just decide.
Yeah.
She's pretty good at just going, okay. And then making a decision.
Plus, I think she knows what peeves you the most. And I think she has her awareness level is high.
Yeah. 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 She knows just how ridiculous of an a-hole I am and knows how to placate that. And that's why we work so well together.
I have no transition to the Pick'em League from there, but here we go.
Yeah, none of these people are ridiculous a-holes. That's just me.
Leading the league in first place, I need flowers to wags my Dixon with 156 points. Israeli Hawk in second, 154. And then we got a number of folks here in third place. Chelsea Hawks. To the Hawk, Unlimited Hawkra, what a Hasselbeck with 153 points. And in first place for week 16, Van Isle Hawk fan with 14 points gets the tiebreaker over Dunlap up them sacks. Who also had 14, but Van Isle Hawk fan getting the win.
That has to feel good, even though that it's such a crapshoot right now regarding each team's health status week to week. Like, good luck.
It probably makes it tough to pick some of these games.
Even
with the, well, I guess maybe the Detroit game this weekend for the Seahawks isn't one that you could necessarily point to, but they have a lot of dudes that are going to be out in this game coming up.
Yeah.
Michael Brockers is out. One of their guards, Vitae. I think he's pretty good.
I'm not going to miss not seeing Brockers.
Brockers won't be there. Josh Reynolds, another former Ram, won't be out on the field.
True.
Jared Goff, I guess we don't know his status. He might be injured, though. It sounds like he has he has a history of playing injured against the Seahawks that I don't really want to get into.
Who?
Jared Goff.
Who? You mean the guy who's going to be out of the league next year?
You made me legitimately think that I didn't actually say his name. You're getting good at this.
Well,
who
if
stuff.
You said it one more time, he would have appeared right in your room there.
Gross. Glad we didn't go that far. All right. Well, we read all of our mail up front. Adam, if you want to get an email in, you can send it to us at gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
Well, I can't love to, Brandon. I'd love to give you my do better, but unfortunately, my do better is going to have to be for both the stupid Google News app and the stupid Apple News app. I'm so sick and tired of these two stupid things that barely work. Half the time, as I sat here through the entire Pick'em read down, going to my, quote, save stories that apparently I never get to go back and look at because they will never fucking load. This has happened 3 weeks in a row now. I tried texting them to myself. I've tried all sorts of things. They'll never pull up. So I had all sorts of freaking do-betters for all of you. But unfortunately, these tech catfish can't get their news apps to just bookmark a catfish story. So for Apple News, Google News, do better.
There has to be a listener out there that has an app that bookmarks stories well that Adam can use for this, because yes, it has been a consistent issue.
Yeah. Well, here's the hardest part. It's got to be something I can use. And so good luck. So think toddler with a phone in their hand. When you're trying to come up with this.
If texting the story to yourself isn't working, why don't you text it to our text number, 253-235-9041? Because then not only you will have it there, but then I can have the access to it. And maybe that's what you do. Text it to that number.
That's an excellent idea, except for the idea that you forgot toddler. That's a lot of numbers to remember in a row.
I will add it to your address book.
You can do that?
You don't have a contacts list in your phone of saved numbers? Because you can't remember phone numbers.
No. But the reason why most of them are there is because at one time when my daughter was like 14 or so, she wasn't allowed by her mom to get her own Apple account, but needed to like log into the Apple account to do something appy. I don't know, whatever. And so she logged into my account with her phone. And so I got all of her contacts. And so, for example, when I call my mom, I call Grandma Monica. So that's how that works.
Your mom is in your phone as grandma.
Yeah. If I want to look up my own number, I'm dad.
You're dad.
And I hope to Christ that they never come and like look through my phone, like in some sort of weird investigation or something, because I have the all sorts of fellow classmates of her who are high school age in my phone, all of their numbers.
No idea how to go in and delete those.
I don't know who they are. I don't know who half these people are.
Then you hit delete.
Well, but what if she's like, you know, lost in a ditch somewhere and I just need to call all the people?
That's true. The more numbers that you have.
Right. That was my thought process.
Well, that's a good thought process.
Yeah. Hello. And then I'd look at my phone. Jamie, do you know my daughter Isabel? Do you know where she is? Is she in a ditch?
You always got to worry about those ditches.
Dude, as a parent, you worry about ditches all the time, too. I know you do.
I do.
Yeah. Especially in the winter. Winter ditches are the worst.
Well, my kids aren't old enough to drive yet, but once they are, I will be worrying about ditches more and more.
Yeah, cold ditches.
Well, my do better this week, I'm going to give it to Nick Ballore. It's been 2 weeks since he's put out an episode of Between Two Ballores. It was two weeks ago with Quandre Diggs. I need my Nick Ballore Between Two Ballores fix, and for him not providing it for 2 weeks now, I'm going through withdrawals. Nick, do better.
Hey, he's trying to focus in on losing these last few games so that we get a higher draft pick.
This is the thing. He doesn't even have any, he has no excuses.
I have a question. If you blow it up, do you bring back Nick Ballore?
Yes.
All right. There we go. Now, this is be a fun game through the offseason because that was a very fast yes.
Yeah.
And then we can put it in categories. Fast yes, maybe yes, or probably yes, maybe yes, and maybe. Not so much. And
bring
get the
back
fuck
all
out.
Of the awesome players and everybody else, the guys who aren't awesome, then, you know, you have a decision to make.
Isn't that what John Schneider does?
Although, how did he not make the Pro Bowl? To the people voting in dudes to the Pro Bowl, how did Nick Ballore not make it? Do better.
Absolutely do better. I mean, that's ridiculous. Nick Ballore is a saint amongst men.
We get, and obviously he's right up there in the alphabet, which was the excuse everybody made last year as to why he made it. But we know it was because he's awesome. And how did he not get in this year? Yeah, it's just Bobby and Quandre.
Well, I mean, they kind of got it right, I guess.
Other than missing Ballore.
Yeah, because Q getting paid this year. I didn't say it'd be by the Seahawks. I just said he's getting paid.
He's getting paid by somebody.
But when you have a ton of cap room, why wouldn't you pay Diggs if you're legit reloading?
I don't necessarily know if he's going to be all that expensive.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody breaks the bank for a player going on to his fourth contract.
Third for sure. Yeah. At least. Yeah.
I don't know. Third contract safeties.
Have you met Jerry Jones? Have you heard his name?
I feel
Have
like they're talked, good though, aren't they? Aren't they good at safety down
right,
in Dallas?
But does that matter to Jerry Jones?
No, maybe not.
I mean, Dan Snyder's still walking around, right? He loves giving third contracts.
It's one I'm interested to watch. And my opinion is that he doesn't play in the trenches.
True.
But I do want him on the team.
Yeah, he's one of...
Having to balance
we'll have to,
that.
At some point, go through the potential free agents. But Diggs would be maybe, you know, one of the three that I would say for sure. If you're reloading.
Well... By free agency, we will have an idea of what the Seahawks are doing.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. Should be fairly obvious.
On to better at life.
All right, man. I know you wanted to do a joint one, but I'm going to throw this one in real quick because if I didn't put it in there, it'd be ignoring a like 20-year odyssey and a $10 billion expenditure to make this thing happen. James Webb Space Telescope launched into space. Didn't blow up. It's up there, baby. It's going to Lagrange Point. It's going to go out there. It's going to look at stuff. It's going to be a time machine. Look back to like beginning of the Big Bang with its gold mirrors. It's freaking gold, dude. The whole thing is 6.5 meters of catfish gold. I can't wait. I can't wait for James Webb. I can't wait for it all to come back. And after all the images to come back and after all the setbacks, all the overruns and everything, it's on its way.
Yeah. And wasn't that telescope still going to be in space next week? You couldn't have held it off? Saved it for next week?
It just launched. It's a momentous event.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. I think losing one of the titans in the football industry is also important. And why John freaking Madden deserves to be better at life to close this show.
I agree to close it for sure. And why can't I be excited and on board with your better at life and excited about James Webb?
I'll allow it. But okay, it's also, I think it's important that we do. We recognize the importance of, the impact that Madden had on our lives growing up watching football with him and Pat Summerall. And man, I know I went back and I watched the last moments of that Seahawks playoff victory against the Dallas Cowboys, where Tony Romo botched the snap, John Madden, Pat Summerall on the call, and nothing like hearing John Madden say at the end of that game, "There's nothing automatic in football," as Tony Romo gets tackled on the way to the end zone, brought down from behind by big play Babs. What a great moment. If you want to relive that and hear the late John Madden, definitely go check that out.
Yeah, John Madden, Pat Summerall, for us, I mean, that was the voice of football, right? I mean, that's who you got excited to listen to for a big game. And I mean, we all in our head, we could all hear it right now, right? Boom.
Boom.
Absolutely. You know, that, and then him.
And drawing on the television, the telestrator. Nobody, you never see anybody really draw on the screen anymore. And I got to thinking about that and how much that connected Madden mm-hmm. to the people watching is because you could see his freaking handwriting drawing on the screen in front of your eyes. And he was breaking down the game for you and showing you, you know, where the running lanes were, you know, the gaps that a player was responsible for. It was because of that you could see so much of that.
Oh, 100%. And that speaks to the previous life that he had as a successful coach.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's something that's a little before our time. And we don't think of him as a great coach.
Raiders coach Madden. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to the new doc coming out that because I've always wondered, how did he become a coach? Like it feels like there was no John Madden and then there was John Madden. Like it just like he just appeared and then he was a coach and then the voice of football.
He played football first. He was I think he was drafted by the Eagles.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure he played on the offensive line.
Okay.
But I think there was a story about because he was injured and I don't think he ever saw the field. I think there's a story about how there was another NFL player involved that as part of the story and kind of getting him into that coaching side that really drew him in that direction. And so, yeah, I need to watch the documentary. I'm sure that's part of it.
That's part of it. And look, I think that we all have to recognize that any man who invents the turducken is an all-timer.
You got the turducken. You have the video game franchise that overtook.
No, that pales in comparison to the turducken.
It pales in comparison, but I just have
to. It was three birds in one, dude.
Was it three or five?
I don't know. It was a mind-blowing amount.
It was more than two.
And his breakdown of the turducken every Thanksgiving, as he described what went into it, was gold, too. Not to mention the man, he was like, nah, on planes. I'm out.
Yeah, just I'm bussing around bus everywhere.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No.
No. On the Madden Cruiser?
I remember everybody kind of being fascinated by it, even when he was still calling games, that he would always bus around. And
yeah,
it was kind of a source of fascination for people.
He's like, no, things fall out of the sky, like turkeys, ducks, goose, things you stuff together and then eat. I don't go in the air.
He was a fascinating dude. Of course, there was, you can't go without mentioning the Madden football game. And I know maybe you're just a little bit salty that overtook Tecmo Bowl as the most popular football franchise. And with all that said, John Madden, better at life than Skip Bayless.
100% good choice by you. The reason I'm salty about the franchise is I fell out of Madden in 06 because you couldn't throw the freaking ball. Because if you did, if there's a dude like 15 yards off of your receiver, they would slide across the screen at an unreal pace, like Mach 76, and then like pick off the football. And you're like, in real life, that would never happen. I hate this game. I broke a lot of controllers. It cost me a lot of money. No, I was out.
Was that the year that Peyton Hillis was on the cover?
I think it was the year that Sean Alexander was on the cover. 05 or 06.
Oh, that would have been 06, I think. Yeah, Peyton Hillis wasn't on until 12.
And I didn't want to run it with Sean every play. I wanted to throw it with Hasselbeck.
See, that was your problem. You need to be handing off to your league MVP.
No, I want to throw the ball. I wanted to let Matt cook.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.